America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
If you've got that Monday feeling, it will soon go away. You're listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time, the hottest political talk show you'll find live for the next hour on AM 660, The Answer, and produced by the Mercury Free Studio. Lair Adams with you, and now the second autopsy shows the victim in the Ferguson shooting was hit at least six times, all in the front. This follows eyewitness accounts of some people, but totally blows away the claim of some that he was shot in the back while fleeing. You see, that would be the perfect excuse for rioting. Maybe that's why Obama and Eric Holder want a third autopsy. The one the deceased man's parents asked for wasn't good enough. And tonight, shop owners have barricaded their stores, waiting for the onslaught. On a lighter note, it was a beautiful day in Central Florida, and it's a great time to introduce our host, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thank you so very much, Lair Adams. And, yeah, once again, like I cautioned last night, no one should be jumping to conclusions because there were several other things that were revealed today that just makes the whole thing foggier and foggier. Not the least of which was, and we'll talk about this later on, but there is a local TV station that interviewed the store owner that got pushed around and had his box of cigars stolen, who is saying he did not call the police and notify them. So how was the police officer to know that he had committed a crime? This just gets foggier and foggier, and part of the problem is because the police won't tell us what the officer's account is of that night. Perhaps that would help a great deal. Anyway, we'll try to sort through that a little bit later on in the show. We got a lot lined up for you tonight. I am Christopher Hart. Along with us tonight is our executive producer, Nostra Dennis, who is in-house with us.
Am I producing things? I wasn't sure who's producing what.
We got our man, Lucas Paris, who's got the Ustream.tv going on the head cam there. So you can go to Ustream.tv, type in American Adversaries, and we'll be there. And you'll see a fourth man at the table with us this afternoon, and that is Jason Hoyt. And we'll get to Jason here in just a minute. And of course, we have Nick LoCicero on the bridge, so we are in good hands. And we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, give our dear friend Dr. James E. Hardy a call at 407-678-3399. And of course, if you would like to give us a call, the number is always the same, 407-774-8255. And I hope you caught last night's show. If you did not, after tonight's show, you can go to our archive and listen to it. We had three excellent candidates for judge last night, and I'm endorsing them, at least you'll know for three, but unfortunately, if you live in Seminole County, you can only vote for one who was on our show last night. That was Susan Stacy, and I recommend that you do vote for Susan. In Orange County, we had two judge candidates in last night, Patricia Strobridge and Gino Feliciani. Both, I think, are excellent candidates for the judiciary, and I suggest if you live in Orange or Osceola County to vote for them. Stacy for Seminole or Brevard, Strobridge, Feliciani for Orange, Osceola. And we're going to have some candidates in throughout the week and try to help you guys make your choices as early voting has started. So in all the counties, get on out and vote. And if you're not going to do it early, at least do it on Election Day, August 26th, 1 week from tomorrow. All right, Jason Hoyt's in the studio today. Now, if you were listening Friday, we did a show pretty much dedicated to Common Core, and we didn't spend a lot lot of time on the nonsense that it is, because we spent a good deal of time on some things that we could do to, you know, try to get this thing overturned. And one was, of course, email the governor, and you can do that at fl.gov.org, or is that .gov? Anyway, I'll look on my notes and see, but you can email the governor and express your displeasure with him. And once again, there was a couple other things. You can sign a petition. And but there are other people doing things as well, and you probably haven't heard about this, so we're going to go to Jason Hoyt to help us explain this to you. First of all, this is happening in Dixie County, which is up north of Gainesville, between us and Tallahassee.
Yes, Dixie County, their grand jury up there. You know, just to back up just a moment a little bit, you know, we always talk about accountability and holding our elected representatives accountable. What can we do?
Right.
And typically when you ask a Tea Party or 912 or AFP, Freedom Works, and these different organizations, what is the answer? It's always, well, we have to wait every 2 years and vote. You know, we got to hold these guys accountable. And a lot of folks do the petitions and that kind of thing. But we have to wait for maybe, just maybe, if we elect enough of them, maybe they'll pass legislation to undo the damage and restore our rights. You know, and so I've been doing a lot of research trying to find other ways, because you can't convince me, after all the founders did, that the system they put into place was where we have to wait every 2 years for an election. And so there's an organization called NationalLibertyAlliance.org that they're really encouraging people to get reengaged with the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. Fifth Amendment says no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Grand jury in common law is 25 people. We, the people, getting together, and we always hear about indictments, and we just heard one over the weekend about Rick Perry.
Yep.
And an indictment is where a prosecutor, or in that case, a district attorney, comes forward, goes to the grand jury, and says, here, we've got evidence of corruption. And they essentially, a lot of times you hear them about a they can indict a ham sandwich, you know.
Yeah, normally, because you only get the one side of the argument in the grand jury. You get the prosecution side of the argument.
Correct. And to be clear, and society doesn't understand this, the news doesn't say this, but in an indictment, all they're saying is there's enough evidence to then send it to trial, to then be judged by a jury of your peers and determine guilty or not guilty. An indictment is just, yeah, there's enough evidence. That's why they only hear one side.
Right.
But the word that is often missed is presentment. A presentment is where a grand jury, based on their own initiative, whether they hear of criminal activity from a member of the public or they witness it themselves, they have an obligation in their oath, and even in the Florida statute, they have an obligation to begin investigating in their own initiative. And this happened in Dixie County. The Dixie County grand jury foreman a couple months ago heard about some criminal activity. He tried to convene the Dixie County grand jury, and the state attorney kind of got in the way, a little bit of resistance there, obstructed, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a meeting, kind of a town meeting, if you will. 25, or actually more than 25, showed up. They elected 25 new jurors for the people's grand jury under common law of Dixie County. They met at the courthouse last Thursday at 10 a.m. Grand jury deliberations and votes are still kept secret, but what came out of it was filed at the Dixie County Clerk of Courts. Dana Johnson stamped it at 4:31 p.m. Friday. Two true bills of presentment. The first one against state's attorney Jeffrey Sigmeister, charging him with obstruction of justice and jury tampering.
Before not allowing the grand jury to pursue this.
Because according to the U.S. Supreme Court, U.S. versus Williams in 1992, Scalia wrote, the grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting court to initiate an investigation. That is what a presentment is. And they tried to do that, and he obstructed.
And what was the second?
The second one was bribery for the implementation of Common Core.
And this was what they wanted to investigate originally, I take it.
I would imagine so. I don't know if they heard other cases or other issues, but that is what voted upon, and that's what came out of that grand jury.
So we're assuming that this is what the original foreman, the criminal activity that he had caught wind of, was evidently bribery having to do with Common Core.
Yeah, and I've heard this argument before, where, you know, race to the top was the Trojan Trojan horse that snuck Common Core in. Race to the top funding. We want federal money. You know?
Well, I know a lot of people would call that bribery. That would be political bribery. But a grand jury to charge bribery, you would think that this would be something under the table, cash money type thing. Is that what we're talking about here?
No, when you look at the legal definition of bribery, it doesn't have to be cash money under the table. It's actually money for favors. And when I say favors, it doesn't have to be personal favors, but it's public money. So essentially what they're alleging is that because of Race to the Top, a state said, yeah, give me the money, and yeah, we'll go ahead and accept Common Core, that implementation. And actually, I received copies of the true bills, and they go into detail on all these different charges. And it's fascinating to see what's happening, where the people are standing up and the people are saying this whole statutory and regulatory industrial complex controlling our Fifth Amendment grand juries, obstructing them and not letting us, we the people, provide feedback, consent to the governed of what's going on and to what we're going to be held account. I think it's phenomenal.
Right,
I think it's awesome.
You say they in the first presentation, they named the state attorney who got in the prosecuting attorney who got in the way. Did they name people in the second presentation?
They did, and it's quite a list. They listed all of the school board members in Dixie County. They listed the State Board of Educators. I can't remember the names offhand. They also listed Governor Charlie Crist and even Governor Rick Scott for further implementation.
Okay. How is this different, though, than what's happening in Texas? Because if they're claiming that these officials were bribed because of the federal enticement of the federal dollars, isn't that sort of the same thing that they're in? I know the circumstances are different, but what we're talking about here is a political difference becoming now a criminal issue.
You brought up Texas. I mean, when you look at Texas, that's a district attorney that brought the grand jury together, presented information, and you know how grand juries are today.
Well, yeah,
they're like rubber stamps.
Well, sure.
In that Democrat county, I'm sure it's a political motivation there.
Right.
The idea that, and again, I don't know all the facts regarding what happened in Texas.
Right.
But the idea that he's saying basically, you need to step down, or I'm not going to fund your office.
Right. So, and the difference in this case would be that it's the people who are objecting to something that the government have colluded to do, whereas in that case, it's a political vendetta, so to speak.
Correct. And look what the founders put in place. I mean, do you think the founders created the jury system? I mean, that came out of, call it Magna Carta from 1215. Section 62 of the Magna Carta talked about the 25 barons. And for centuries, groups of people got together as the grand jury to be that buffer, which is actually the words that Scalia used. It's that buffer, that referee between the people and the government. And based on their own initiative, they can reach inside the government and root out corruption. And that's what the presentment power is. In 1946, however, the Criminal Procedures Act of 1946, they left presentments out. They didn't change the Constitution. They didn't make them illegal. They just left them out. And in a footnote in a law journal review, they said presentments are obsolete.
So, in other words, legally speaking, it's still an option.
Absolutely.
What would be the next step? Now that they've made the presentment, what happens next?
Well, I think today they might be presenting that the copies of what was filed at the county clerk. They're giving it to the sheriff and saying, sheriff, arrest these folks.
And if he doesn't?
And if they don't, he probably gets on the list for obstruction of justice. Because at the end of the day, even in the Florida Constitution, we are a common law system. We are a common law state. And when 25 folks got together as the People's Grand Jury under common law of Dixie County and they voted anything other than that, people are obstructing justice. So, and this is going to go to the state level. This is going to go back to the federal level.
Well,
and what
do
we have on our side is U.S. versus Williams. 1992, Supreme Court.
One way or the other, this is going to end up in the courts, obviously, because they're going to have to determine, first of all, the validity of the act to begin with, and then the merits of it. So, all right, we'll just have
to keep... It's fascinating. I'll keep you guys apprised of it. Thank you for the opportunity today.
All right, well, thanks for keeping us up to date on these things out there. All right, folks, you hear it here where you won't hear it anywhere else. We are the American Adversaries coming right back at you.
Christopher Hart, Blair Adams, and me, Nostra Dennis, in live on a Monday, on a rare Monday. And it's Monday, so you know what that means, except for last week when he was traveling. Our man from Jerusalem, or from New York, or from Seattle, is back in Jerusalem, safe and sound, and that is Abe Katzman. Welcome back to the American Adversaries. Abe, how are you, sir?
Thank you. Yes, in Jerusalem. I am back.
You are back. Abe, how are you doing tonight, first of all?
Everything's great.
All right. Tonight at midnight, your local time was supposed to be the deadline or the end time for the latest ceasefire. Has it been extended again?
Yes, they were able to agree to a 24-hour extension. So we'll be going through the same exercise tomorrow night.
Do you think that this is fruitful or fruitless, these little extensions as we go along? In other words, do you think that there's any progress being made in the negotiations, as it were?
Well, I think that 24 hours at a time of quiet is worthwhile in and of itself. So that's not a bad thing. And I think that the longer that the quiet is maintained, the harder it will be to reinstate any kind of hostilities. In terms of progress being made, that's a tougher call in terms of the negotiations between Hamas and Israel and Egypt and Islamic Jihad is involved. Hamas is involved. In fact, one of the reasons that I think there hasn't been so much progress made is that even on the Palestinian side, the faction is not united. You've got Fatah and Islamic Jihad and Hamas. They all have representatives in these negotiations, and they have different agendas. Fatah has been willing to accept the Egyptian proposals. Hamas and Islamic Jihad have not been. So it's hard to tell whether anything that we'd call progress is taking place. I think the progress is that Israel is not buckling to pressure, and Israel is holding out for a deal that would make it that would actually bring it some peace long term. And as long as Israel doesn't cave in, this is an area where Hamas is looking for some kind of victory. They couldn't get it on the battlefield, so they're going to try to get some kind of diplomatic victory. And as long as Israel does not cave in, I think that's a good thing. And if that delays a ceasefire, so be it. The more important thing is to maintain real peace, not a piece of paper.
How strong of a role is Egypt playing in these negotiations, and what is their basic stance? Do they, for instance, share the view that Israel shares, and that is that no more rockets or mortar fire?
Yeah, they've taken a pretty strong stance from Israel's perspective, a pretty strong pro-Israel stance. The issues that are holding up something that are really holding up an agreement are, from Hamas's perspective, Hamas is demanding, I mean, they're in no position to make demands, but that's not stopping them from doing so.
Right.
So they're making demands that they be given a seaport or an airport, that borders be open with Israel, that fishing rights be extended. They're basically looking for ways that they would be able to rearm themselves. An airport or a seaport would just open them up wide for the opportunities of getting Iranian arms shipped in. As it is now, they're surrounded by a hostile Egypt and by Israel, and Egypt and Israel will work together to keep Iranian arms from coming back into Gaza. So the last thing that Egypt wants to do, or Israel, is to give them an airport or a seaport, which would just undo the advantages that Israel and Egypt currently have over Gaza.
Abe Nostradamus here. Before we hit the break in about 90 seconds, we read last week while you were off the air with us that Hamas had an ingenious way to keep these border tunnels they were building from being found out, and that's by making the workers dig them and then killing them. To me, that's the smartest thing in the world. Is that border tunnel issue, though, is that all sewn up? Are they all secure? Is the border secure underneath?
Well, as best as anyone knows from a civilian position, the Israeli military says that they have destroyed the known tunnels. It's a formulation that leaves a little bit of wiggle room, so I don't know if that's actually the case.
And that's known tunnels.
Known tunnels. they are coming up with some tunnel detection technology where they think that they've made advances beyond anything they've made before. They've tested some 700 systems before, and none of them passed the test. Apparently, they've got a system now that is effective and has been tested.
Abe, let me ask you this. Do you think that one of the reasons why Hamas is even going along with these ceasefires, be them 5 days or 24 hours or whatever, do you think that their arsenal has been decimated by the actions?
Their arsenal has been somewhat depleted. They were estimated to have somewhere in the range of 12,000 rockets, and they've shot somewhere in the area of 3,500. So they've got a ways to go. It's not like they're out of missiles.
All right. Okay.
But there's definitely been a degradation.
All right. We'll talk. You can stay with us through the break.
Sure.
All right. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with our man Abe Katzman live from Jerusalem. Please don't go away.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart once again for SoundbiteRx.com. Don't forget, folks, go there. It's good medicine for what ails your ignorance. All right, this is brand new today at SoundbiteRx.com. It's an article about how President Obama doesn't understand the Middle East at all, at least by all observations that would appear to be the case. Egypt is now having to turn more and more to Russia because the United States is turning less and less towards Egypt. And this is another great new article, brand new today at SoundbiteRx.com. Dana Milbank, who's a liberal writer for The Washington Post, really comes down on President Obama, saying, is he more interested in his golf game or the United States? I'd say probably neither. He's more interested in those, what is it, the NBA, what is it, the college football picks, college basketball picks. That's what I'm trying to get to here. All right, also this, folks, left-winger Kristen Powers asked the obvious question, where has President Obama been for Christians? You know, even as this latest crisis in Iraq has been occurring, we hear about the Yazidis, but nobody from the administration ever seems to mention the Christians. So please, don't forget, folks, go to soundbiterx.com. It's good medicine. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, it's a hot Monday afternoon here in Central Florida, so be careful if you're working outside and make sure you drink lots of water and eat lots of bananas. You are listening to the American Adversaries. Once again, we're coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. We have our man Abe Katzman in Jerusalem on the phone with us. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, 407-774-8255 is the number. Abe, we were talking just before the break about perhaps the Hamas arsenal has been degraded, at least somewhat, not necessarily just by them firing the rockets, but by the actions that the Israeli Defense Forces have been taking in Gaza. Are there any reports of that?
Well, their ability to fire rockets from their original rocket launching sources has definitely been degraded. Remember, every time they tried firing from somewhere, that would be a target for Israel to take out. And Israel took out an awful lot of targets in Gaza.
Right.
So I think their ability to effectively fire weapons has also been degraded. It's not just the number, but it does have to do with the quality of rocket attacks that they'd be able to launch. But still, they could. I think their bigger problem is just that they found that the attacks were not really doing very much. Israel was overwhelmingly able to knock out with the Iron Dome the rocket attacks that were heading toward any kind of Israeli cities or population areas. They caused a few deaths, which are terrible, but in the scheme of things, it's certainly not any kind of great military victory. So I think that they probably just found it counterproductive to keep on firing.
And also, it didn't seem to hold back Netanyahu's decision to pursue the perpetrators, even though their publicity, their public relations campaign, did seem to be getting some traction with the Western media.
Well, yeah, the traction with the Western media is disturbing. It is maybe the most, from Israel's perspective, maybe the most disturbing thing about this entire episode. The rise of we'll be polite and call it anti-Israel feeling, although I think that it is overwhelmingly anti-Semitic.
I do too.
But that rise and the legitimization of expression of anti-Israel feeling and anti-Semitic feeling is something that has that has disturbed Israelis a great deal.
Now, there have been some protests here in the United States. There was one recently right down here in Miami, but it was mostly Palestinian sympathizers who were doing, you know, the protesting. But in Europe, it seems to be a little bit more broad. It seems to cut across society a little bit wider. Is that a misperception on my part?
No, I think that's exactly right. I'm not so worried about it. It occurs in the U.S., here and there, but in Europe it seems to be everywhere. A British supermarket yesterday removed all of its kosher food. They claimed that they were fearing a rampage by anti-Israel protesters who have gone into other supermarkets and torn down all the food from the shelves that came from Israel, or that they said came from Israel. I don't know if they're checking. The fact that they would preemptively cave in to a threat that hadn't even been made yet says to me that you're talking about something much more serious in Europe than you are in the U.S.
Well, it's 2,000 years of anti-Semitism, Abe.
And it's hauntingly similar to what was going on in the 30s, where people would turn a blind eye or do things that would not discourage the anti-Semitism, but acquiesce to it, Abe.
Yes, I think that's it's those echoes of the 1930s that really disturb Israel. I mean, this is a country that still has many living Holocaust survivors, so many people here, if they are either children of survivors or grandchildren of survivors, it's very much in the consciousness of Israel.
Yeah.
And to see the repetition of it in Europe in the very areas where it happened before is really disturbing to the people in Israel.
Yeah, and part of the problem, which complicates it for European governments, is you now have very large, or at least, shall we say, significantly larger populations of Muslims in these countries.
That's a huge problem. And I think that even among European leaders who are not themselves anti-Israel, they know how to count, and they understand that there's a Muslim constituency they have to deal with. And if it means going along with certain anti-Israel sentiment, then a lot of them are not going to stand up to that. They will just go along with it if those are the prevailing political winds.
I'd heard, Abe, that in some districts in France and in Great Britain, the majority of people in a neighborhood are Muslim.
It's happened in certain places where what you really see is in a number of places that the majority of those under 18 are Muslim because the birth rates are so much higher among the Muslims.
Right.
So what that means is that even if it's not majority Muslim today or tomorrow, give it a few years.
Sure.
Because that's demography.
Yeah, and believe me, folks, they don't believe in abortion. That's a fact. I read something disturbing at the tail end of last week that the United States had cut off ammunition supplies to Israel. Is that correct?
That seems to be correct. That's a report that was in the Wall Street Journal and that was confirmed by both not by sources, both in the U.S. administration and in the Israeli government. This is something that has got Israel up in arms. Here, this is our ally. It's wartime, and the last thing that they should be doing, that the U.S. should be doing, is holding up arms shipments. What they did, there were a number of arms shipments that were allowed to be done on a military-to-military basis, meaning that they did not need any kind of political approval.
Right.
They had, in a sense, been pre-approved.
Right, because we're such close friends.
Yes. and because the militaries have such an excellent relationship.
Right.
Well, the Obama administration decided that they were going to get into the middle of this and require their own approval, their own additional layer of approval between the administration, particularly the State Department, that they would have to sign off on every shipment of arms to Israel. Even though the administration has been twisting and turning, trying to explain how this doesn't change anything, it's pretty hard to explain that it doesn't change anything when you've got an extra layer of approval required, and theoretically they could disapprove some of the sales.
And apparently
they did.
I was going to say, at least temporarily, they've stopped them. Until they quote-unquote approve them or whatever.
Abe, I know I asked this at least a year ago, but I'm going to ask you again now. How does the average Israeli feel about American Jews who are very soft on this whole war between your country and the Palestinians? I mean, there are so many people there that here in this country that claim to be Jewish, but they're very soft on this.
I don't believe that the Israelis are happy about it, but I think that there is an understanding that so many Jews in America are liberals and are supporters of the Democrats.
No matter what, they're liberals first and Jews second.
Yeah.
There are indications. I don't want to overemphasize what's happening, but there are some indications that that rock solid support for Democrats from the Jewish community in America may be cracking. And this is the sort of thing. This arms or suspension of arms deliveries is exactly the kind of thing that I think is pushing certain Jewish supporters of the Democrats too far. Especially, there are a number of people who are big donors to the Democratic Party. Even if they don't switch to Republican, they may close their checkbooks.
That would be huge. Abe, we just have time for maybe one more question here, and I'd like to ask it about what's going on in Lebanon concerning ISIS. Now, President Obama, just before the show, gave a little speech and press conference where he basically bragged, now that I've got my focus on Iraq, now things are turning around there again. We took this dam back in Mosul. But ISIS is still on the move, and this is far from over, and they've been making movements into northern Lebanon. How concerned is Israel about ISIS now?
Israel is concerned about ISIS. It's not the most immediate threat, but it's certainly down the road. ISIS seems to be deadly serious about what it is that they're doing. Deadly might be the most important word there, considering what they're doing to the populations that they encounter. I'm not sure why the president thinks that he's done enough and now can go back to play golf again. But he's sadly mistaken if he thinks that he's seen the last of ISIS just because of a couple of successful air raids.
Yeah. It's a sad day in America when somebody like me has to sit here and think, would I rather have this president on the job, or would I really actually rather have him on the golf course?
Play another round.
And it's sad because, not only this president, but the people that he has surrounded himself with to advise him on these extraordinarily important decisions. I mean, a guy like Ben Rhodes, who seems like a decent guy, but what does he know about foreign policy and terrorism? He's a political hack. I mean, President Obama is really done us and himself a disservice by surrounding himself, especially at this point in his administration, with just a bunch of political lackeys, Abe.
Yeah, that's been the story for some time. You look at who his closest aides are, and they are not people with vast stores of experience in government.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, Abe, well, listen, thank you very much, and you take care, and we'll hope that the ceasefires and the peace continues over there. You can't argue with a quiet night, so you enjoy it.
Amen.
Enjoy it while you can, my friend, and we'll hope that it continues, and pray for you and pray for Israel. Thanks for being a part of our show, Abe Katzman.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
All right.
Stay safe.
Absolutely. And, of course, that's Abe Katzman, and you can find, he's a great columnist that writes great articles, and you can find his work, folks, at Abe Katzman, that's with an S, abekatzman.com, real easy, abekatzman.com. And in the first segment of the show, I referred to the website where you can send an email to the governor. I almost got it right. It's flgov.com. Thanks.
Because GOV is usually a suffix for government websites.
Yes, so yes, that's what I thought.
Understand the confusion.
Okay.
.gov.
Right. Yeah, there you go. So it's flgov.com. You can go there. And there's a little banner where it says email the governor, and you can email the governor.
Tell him what you think.
Tell him to take that Common Core and you know what with it. But obviously, don't be rude. And
he may be in jail, Chris.
I doubt that.
Don't worry.
Wouldn't that be something to have Charlie Crist and Rick Scott shackled?
shackled
together at
the roommate governors.
All right, okay, folks. When we come back, we'll continue the show. You're welcome to be a part of it at 407-774-8255. And don't forget about Roxy Pacifics, especially with the sun out like this. If you get out there and get sunburned, you need to put some Roxy on it. Right, Larry?
Especially if you have teenagers, too. Problems with acne, this works fantastic.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. If you're out there on the road again, just please drive safe and turn up the American Adversaries, and we'll keep you entertained for the next 8.5 minutes. Also, if you're not out on the roads, and once again, just turn up the radio and listen to the American Adversaries. Or you can go to your computer and dial in Ustream.tv and type in American Adversaries, and you'll see us, thanks to Lucas Paris and the head cam he's got going over here. All right, we just got a few minutes left in the show, but if you want to be a part of it, we still have time for a call or two. 407-774-8255 is the number. I want to talk just a few minutes that we have here about this thing in Ferguson. You know, the president did come out and make a little speech, I guess about 4:15 this afternoon, and took a few questions. And I guess maybe he's setting up another beer summit because it was sort of similar to the thing where the Harvard professor got arrested, where he said, I don't know the facts, but the cops acted stupid.
Yeah.
It was sort of a version of that today. He did, after basically saying that the police had overreacted, went on to say, call.
And he doesn't know if they overreacted or not.
That was the point I was going to make, Larry. I suggested on the show last night, I would like to talk about what happened up there, but be honest with you, I don't know.
Yeah,
and
he doesn't either.
Exactly. The president doesn't know. Anybody who tells you that they know what happened is lying, because no one knows except now for the police officer who encountered Michael Brown. And it certainly appears that there was an altercation. There was a fight. I do not at all think that the police officer shot Michael Brown out of any sort of racial animosity or anything like that. It was a situation where the police officer probably felt
the fear of his life.
He was right. Exactly. Now, not knowing the details, we can't tell if that was actually the case or not, or if perhaps he could have done something else rather than the actions that he took. We just can't say. And so for the president to come out and do this, all he's doing is inflaming the situation.
Well, and who really didn't help, and it really disappointed me, was the chief of the highway patrol that they brought in. He was up there. He was having things calmed down. And then he had to put his own personal feelings into it and ruined everything that he had tried to
and
do.
And you just said
it. It just got worse after that.
He put his own personal feelings into it, which is not what he was there to do. And the media has run with this because it's been a story to their making, because they can fill in all the details.
Yep.
You see, and
it's tailor made for them.
Yeah, and the police, I believe, have not handled this correctly from the start. They should have quickly got out with the officer's version of events, regardless of what that version was. They needed to get it out. We still don't know. We're working now. We've got a couple of autopsies. Well, you can only tell so much from an autopsy. And then there's this report today, too, that I caught in our tip sheet. And I had heard nothing about this, because it was my impression that when Michael Brown robbed the convenience store, you would have assumed that the guy went and called the police. Well, Friday, his lawyer gave a press conference, and according to KDSK of St. Louis, I'll read now from, and this was, you can find this at thegatewaypundit.com. according to this TV station, KDSK, I assume it's a TV station, maybe it's a radio station, but they were at this press conference and they said an attorney for the owners of the market held a press conference Friday in which he, I presume meaning the owner of the market, wanted Ferguson Market and Liquors customers to know that the store did not, and this is their word, snitch to the police about Brown robbing the store. Nor did they offer the store's surveillance video of the robbery to police. It goes on to say that the owner said he did not call the police. Now, I don't know if this man is just saying this now because he's afraid of the repercussions seeing what's going on, which would be understandable.
I would understand that.
It would be highly understandable. The problem is because we've heard nothing from the police, we've seen no official response from the police, we don't know. Well, so once again, this just adds, it makes the fog even thicker and harder to see through.
Well, Rush actually brought out today on his program that the officer did not know anything about this robbery, and it never was in his mind that this kid had robbed a store. He was just walking in the middle of the street and wanted him to come over to the side of the street, but the kid knew he had just robbed the store.
Correct.
And thought the police were there to get him.
Absolutely. And so, you know, obviously, once again, we don't know what happened. We can only speculate as to certain things and certain facts we do know. In other words, the kid knew that he had stole the cigars and didn't know that the cop didn't know that. So that plays into the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I see we got Pasquale Barba, our sponsor on the show from Cafe Positano. Pasquale, how you doing tonight?
How you doing?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
Hi to everybody.
All right.
About time you called in.
There you go.
Well, I have to call in. Well, nobody call in about what's going on with these things happen up there in Missouri.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, we have to respect the law. And if people want to do demonstration, I have nothing against. But if you break the law, if you break a store window, whatever they're doing wrong, the law, they need to do something about. So if they do something about, they complain. If they don't do nothing, the other people say, oh, we don't have police, they save us.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
I think they listen too much to the people on the street. We have law, and we have to respect the law. Why we have a police? Why we pay tax to have a police?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, and especially when it comes to the protests. There's absolutely no excuse for these protests and riots and
it's
looting.
The same thing. It's the same thing if tonight I go around somewhere here and I break a window and I steal something. What happened to me?
Right, yeah. I understand where you're coming from, and you're absolutely right about that.
And that's what the president needs to talk about.
Yeah.
You guys can do demonstration.
Yeah.
But if you guys do something wrong, you pay the consequences.
Yeah, that's why you're absolutely right.
I understand somebody died. Let her do the law. We have the jury. We have the judge. We have loyal, and we have everything who take care.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The president missed an opportunity today to do exactly what you're talking about, and I think that it would have gone, I believe, a long way to calm the situation down up there.
But real quick, Pasquale, can I ask you a question? Why do you think that these people feel rioting is going to do anything in the long run to help themselves out?
I don't think they will help themselves out. What are they doing right now? They're doing more bad things. I love black people, white people, Spanish, Chinese. I don't care. But now, if somebody do bad things on the street, automatic now they are FBI for everybody.
Yeah,
Watch for these people. Watch for these people. Well, they don't respect the law.
Yeah. All right. Pasquale, I got to let you go because I'm all out of time. But we'll be talking about this more as the weeks progress. Obviously, there'll be no doubt about that. But thanks very much, and thanks for being a sponsor of the American Adversaries.
God bless you guys, and God bless America.
All right.
You're right, buddy.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. And you know, it is a sad situation up there. It needs to be calmed down. And the president missed an opportunity, I feel, today to do just that, to settle this situation down up there. And it's going to obviously take a while before we know exactly what happened that night. Maybe we'll never know. But once again, this does not give the people up there a right to go up and loot and do that sort of thing. But you ask why they do it. I remember when I was a kid, my uncle used to tell me, watch out for the people who want to get their names in the paper. Because they'll always get you in trouble. And you have the media up there with their cameras set up, ready to go. And so you have these people who want to be on TV, and it all just, it's just a very volatile atmosphere. And
these bags full of gasoline, like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, Chris.
The best thing the media could do would be leave town. By the way, Carl texted me, the Department of Justice asked the police not to give out the videotape initially.
Yeah.
But why? All right. Anyway, a lot to go.
Didn't fit their format, Chris.
Night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM 660.